Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. It's good to see you.
Hello, Dr. Paul.
Well, very good. Yesterday, there was a special meeting at the White House. I didn't get invited. I'm upset. But there were some support, some reports about what was going on. And the president was scheduled to meet with a special person from Saudi Arabia, a crown prince, a very important guy, not very old. But he's probably running Saudi Arabia,
yeah.
You know, whether it's the oil companies, the economy, the defense minister, the whole work. So it was a significant meeting, and it was going to be a short meeting. It was just about meant to be, hello, how are you? How are you doing? But Merkel didn't show up, and she was supposed to be there for a special luncheon, but the snow scared her off, and somebody scared the snow off, too, so it wasn't as bad. But anyway, she didn't show, so there was a chance for luncheon. So they extended her meeting. They had a special luncheon, so he ended up getting a free lunch. So I don't think there's a saying, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. He got a free lunch at the White House at the expense. Of course, somebody always has to pay, so the American taxpayers pay. But the meeting was significant because there was certainly a lot of discussion going on. And if I had to look at the reports and decide what I think was the most significant, I think it was designed to lay plans to be more anti-Iranian. You know, what are we going to do with those Iranians? So with that subject coming up, then the subject of Yemen came up because everybody knows, you know, that's all the Iranians dealing. And I'm being facetious because that's way blown out of proportion. So this this was significant. It has to do with weaponry. It has to do with civil liberties and a lot of discussion. And it's pretty amazing amount of power this individual has at the age of 31. But he also is supposed to be working with a very young, wealthy American, the son-in-law of the president, and they are going to bring about peace in the Middle East. So hopefully they're successful on that. But for some reason, I am not too optimistic about that either, but just wish them well.
Yeah, this just shows really the power of foreign lobbies in Washington, D.C., because the Saudis throw millions of dollars around. It doesn't matter who's elected. It doesn't matter who's running things. The Saudis have got so much power because they hire all kinds of lobbyists, several different, you know, different companies, millions of dollars. But, you know, it's been sort of touchy because it's well known that the Saudis were very much behind Hillary Clinton. And there's a big question. As a matter of fact, we have a graphic here that I think explains it pretty well from June. Trump wasn't happy about it. The Saudis gave $25 million to Clinton. Didn't think that was fair when they were running. I think there was some video, some audio of the Saudi prince saying, we funded 20% of Clinton's campaign. So it wasn't sure what kind of relationship they would have, but it looks like they're getting along quite well. The New York Times reported the Saudis are optimistic about Trump because of Obama's refusal to forcefully engage in the Middle East in issues like the war in Syria. Because, you know, Obama, that non-interventionist.
Yeah. Well, when they sent that 25, she was still Secretary of State.
Yeah.
And also was going to be the next president. Everybody knew that. And but it wasn't reported on MSNBC and CNN. We didn't hear about it there. But it did raise a lot of questions. But it shows how powerful these lobbyists are and foreign governments. But that, of course, I think is a consequence of us inviting that type of shenanigans because we're involved in all their business, you know, and we're selling them stuff like weapons, and so they have to come and lobby. But in fact, it was the weapons. I bet you this was a major discussion there because, you know, there's been a hold on selling weapons to Saudi Arabia. And my guess is that that's going to be removed because, you know, the military-industrial complex just might be part of the deep state, and they don't want to be cut out of any deals because they might buy those weapons from somebody else, and we're not going to lose Saudis as customers. So I'm sure that'll be changed, and as long as they're in a coalition with Trump on these wars that we're fighting, I think they won't have any trouble. The Democrats will probably go along with the neocons and you know, open up these sales to Saudi Arabia.
Well, it's funny you'd mention weapons, Dr. Paul, because we happen to have another clip that is pretty apropos this meeting. You know, the media is helping us today rather than the other way around. Donald Trump's State Department approves Saudi Arabia weapons sales blocked by Barack Obama. deal was previously blocked over concerns of human rights violations.
Right.
So they're going to get those weapons.
You know, and that was also on the discussion. And the analysis that I read was that Trump doesn't, he assured him, I'm not going to worry about your civil rights violation. And we're not going to worry about your anything related to gender. And this was the reassurance that we weren't going to nitpick as Obama was doing. Now, people would say, well, we have to be very concerned and we have to talk about it. But it really, the violations of civil liberties in Saudi Arabia is their problem.
Yeah.
I think we can make a moral statement and object to what they do. But I don't think that should be our business of going in and saying these changes should occur this way. But I got to thinking, you know, if we did use that as a test, any country that violated the civil liberties of their people, we won't sell them any more weapons. Well, that would include a lot of people. Matter of fact, the military industrial complex would probably lose business with the U.S. government. When you think of our prisons, and when you think of what's going on, and you think about the violation by the, the people get put in prison by the Army Corps of Engineers and all these environmentalists that get put in prison. So there's a lot of violations of civil liberties in this country. But I'm obviously being very facetious there. But that was the reason Obama, you know, was cutting off, trying to impose his will on what they do. And I think so far what we've read and understand at this meeting, it wasn't drifting toward a non-interventionist policy. I think there's a lot of muddy stuff going on between the two countries.
And I think it is probably clever on Trump's part with regard to his base, because as the Times said, Saudi Arabia is encouraged by Trump's lack of interest in human rights and vowed to take a hard line on Yemen. And I think the average Trump voter would say that, you know, that makes sense. What are we going around whining about human rights for? We got to, you know, protect ourselves from ISIS. But I think it's a false contrast, because it puts up the false idea that somehow Obama was reticent, was hesitant to use force, which is not the case at all.
That's for sure. And Yemen, I think, was a big issue in the discussion. You know, we have expressed sympathy. We've used our drones. Obama was doing that. He took a position to be against the Houthis. And yet, I think Trump's going to be much more aggressive. He's been using drones much more aggressively in that area. And I think this is, a big issue. And it's likely to be escalated because, Trump is going to be more aggressive to go in and root out those rebels who evidently they don't like their government. But it's also inviting trouble from Al-Qaeda and stirring up more trouble. So I don't think there's going to be a net benefit from what we do. But nevertheless, the war is going to continue. It's going to escalate. And who knows what will happen, when things got desperate in Syria, Assad got some help from the outside. What happens if this civil war gets out of hand, and then maybe the Iranians might actually get involved, even more so? And yet they've already used that as an excuse to go after the Iranians, because they said they've conspired to do that, which from our viewpoint, we don't have the evidence that is the case.
No, it's a longstanding canard that somehow the Iranians are behind what's happening in Yemen. Yemen fell apart really because of the U.S.-backed Arab Spring, which saw the overthrow of one dictator in favor of another, who I think got 98 or 99% of the vote because he ran unopposed, and the people didn't like that, and so they overthrew him. The Saudis wanted to put him back in. That's what it's all about. But this longstanding canard is really, it forms the whole basis of the U.S. backing of this horrible Saudi aggression against Yemen. But we have another clip. I'm sorry to keep putting these clips up, but this is the pro-war Washington Post. This isn't one of our publications. If we could put it up. Here's what they say about this canard, about the Iranians behind. No, Yemen's Houthis actually aren't Iranian puppets. So even their house organ disagrees with this thing that's the whole basis for Trump's involvement.
Every once in a while they get a flash of truth.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is, I think it's good when we get to hear some of that. But another subject that it was said they discussed at this meeting had to do with safe zones.
Yeah.
And that that the Saudis are for this and they will support it. And of course, I see the safe zones as another instrument or another policy that is a reaction to the previous bad policy. We get in there and cause all this trouble, and all of a sudden there's a lot of migration, and then there's people sympathetic to the migrant, so we have to subsidize them, give them huge amounts of money and special privileges. People get upset. Europe's in shambles. People here in this country, they don't like it. So Trump comes up, well, there's an answer to this. We will just carve out a place. I don't know whether it's going to look like a big concentration camp or a small country or what they're going to do, but militarily and strategically, this might involve more problems.
Well, some interventionist got his ear, I guess, and told him about this. There already are safe zones in Syria. They're called the government-controlled areas. And this is an absolute fact. 1 million people left East Aleppo to government-controlled West Aleppo. 1 million people. They wanted to go into the areas controlled by the government because those areas are not ruled by Sharia law. The women aren't forced to cover up. They're not this hard version of Islam. And this is simply a fact. Aleppo is being rebuilt as a united city now. I just saw several articles about how everyone's shipping in and rebuilding the place. If it really was Assad, for whatever his faults, if he really was just gassing his people for the fun of it, why on earth would 1 million people go over to the side that he controls?
Seems to me they are still agreeing with Obama's position, Assad has to go.
Yes.
Because what we do isn't necessarily consistent. There's sometimes it was much more aggressive, Assad has to go, but now Assad can remain a little bit. But when you look at what's happening now and the strategy might be they're just lining up their ducks. And this point you make that there are the safe zones where they could go, but they won't give an inch, you know, to Assad. And therefore, this is going to be prolonged. But there's a lot of difficulty. This whole thing that was going on with Saudi Arabia, invites the big questions. Where is Russia on this? Because first, we ally ourselves with the Saudis blindly. So, the position is not only will they take the position of the invasion of Yemen, but also the position that they're going to be anti-Iranians, because everybody knows Saudi and the Iranians are fighting tooth and nail, but the Iranians have to be allies with the Russians. So, if things get difficult, who knows what would happen then? Russia doesn't seem to be the type of country that's just going to sit back and say, oh, yeah, I guess we're not going to get involved. They didn't sit back and allow that happen in Syria. And so it's very interesting that it would have been so much nicer if we'd had a Trump that said, why can't we talk to the Russians, which he did say for a long time, and we don't know where he is on that. But we have to quit talking to the Iranians. Yeah. We have to be aggressive. We have to go and align ourselves with the Saudis. And we have to be antagonistic because they're causing all the trouble in the world. So that's so difficult of a policy to work out. There's so many variables. Nobody knows what will happen when some more violence occurs on how these sides are going to align themselves.
And a lot of people who share your values of non-interventionism, they held their noses and voted for Trump because exactly of what he said about Russia. Said there's probably a lot of bad stuff about Trump, but if he does this one thing, it'll be a success. And from that point on, he's done nothing but appoint anti-Russia people. Nikki Haley, the U.S. ambassador to NATO, all these people on down have been very aggressive toward Russia. So what happened to these promises?
Well, it doesn't look like they've made much progress, or they've decelerated the progress that was made there. And I don't think it's going to go away. How would you like to summarize this? Do you have any more headlines, or what do you think's really going on over there?
Well, this is the takeaway quote that I would have, I think, because this whole thing, the whole collusion between Saudi Arabia and the Trump administration on Yemen has to do with we're fighting al-Qaeda. That's the justification. And here's a piece from Reuters, if we can put it up. I know this might shock you, Dr. Paul, but how Saudi Arabia's war in Yemen has made al-Qaeda stronger and richer. And this is, again, this is Reuters. This is not one of our publications. But here's, let me read you just one quote. This is what I would take away. The Saudi campaign backed by the U.S. has helped al-Qaeda in the Arab Peninsula become stronger than at any time in its 20 years of existence.
That sort of blends in with my argument that they come and bomb and kill us and want to because they're reacting to some of the abuses that we've poured on them over the years. It's been since 1990 that we've been involved in killing, Muslims and Arabs and being involved in overthrowing government and creating this mass migration. So that is related to. But the other thing that I think is rather annoying is where does the authority come from? You know, more troops are pouring into Syria right now. They're lining up in Kuwait, and the Congress says nothing. It's uninteresting. The people don't seem to be alerted to what could happen and what is actually happening. But nobody asks, where does the president get this authority? Of course, our president today is not the first one. He's just following, you know, the convention. They've been doing this for so long. Matter of fact, I think the first big move with the president moving us into a disastrous war happened with Harry Truman taking his marching orders from the United Nations. And it's continued, but it's gotten much worse because it's so constant and so often. But they say, well, we have the authority. We came in 2001 with the authority that was given to go after those individuals that were responsible for 9/11. Well, you know, most of the people, there was a study done on that. Most of the people involved in the violence in the Middle East, a lot of young people, they aren't even really aware of 9/11. They tested a few people. Hey, what are you talking about? What's this 9/11? You know, they're just into the intrigue or the violence. But they're still using that authority to go after the people who caused 9/11. And all we have done is escalate a mess, killed a lot of people, a lot of Americans died, and has contributed significantly to our financial crisis in this country. And if the American people knew exactly how important foreign policy is, they would, rebel and say, look, enough is enough. Maybe we could solve some of our problems of shortage of medical care in this country if we channeled some of those funds back into this country. But that's not likely to happen soon, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.